You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. Today we will talk about the role of AI, and here especially in clinical development. There's a lot going on, and we will talk with an expert, François, about future opportunities. This is an absolutely outstanding episode. One thing, as this episode airs, you have about 2 weeks left to submit an abstract to the Conference of the Effective Statistician happening early November, first half of November, and the great thing is we don't have any limits in terms of number of abstracts we can accept. So as long as it's good quality and it's relevant, then submit it. You can even submit something that you have presented elsewhere to reach a broader community. Also, if you submit, then you get the full premium packages, all the different workshops in there. We have actually lots of workshops, and maybe there's a few further coming until November. So for sure, check out theeffectivestatistician.com for the upcoming conference, and please consider to submit an abstract. Or if you don't want to present something, then just register. There's a free part and premium part. I think the premium part is really cool with all the interactive workshops and also presentations, the contributed ones. So I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today, I'm super excited to speak with François about AI. François has been in the industry for a very, very long time, has seen many, many different things, and has built some amazing things. So who can better introduce François than François himself? So over to you, François.
Thank you, Alexander. So very nice to be here with you. So just so that people know about me a little bit more, I'm a statistician by training. I have a PhD in statistics. I've been in the industry for almost 30 years now. We're starting my career as clinical statistician in a big pharma company for more than 12 years. And then there was some reorganization, as there are always in this kind of companies. And I decided to leave and to set up my own business, CleanBay, which is a consulting CRO in statistics. And the company has been operating for 17 years now. So we primarily work on statistics-based and reporting of clinical research. And I had last year, before the COVID, I wanted to expand a little bit into the AI area and the machine learning area. But then and create another business at that time. But then the COVID happened and we could not really do anything. So I delayed the investment by 2 years. And last year, I set up a spin-out of this CleanBay company called Prodis that is dealing with some AI and machine learning developments. And I wanted it to be both for the pharma and the healthcare, as well as in other areas like tea and things like that. But the company did not really succeed as a standalone company. We were not able to complete the developments in the other sectors than the healthcare. So most recently, I decided to terminate that business and then to focus only on CleanBay and transition all of the AI and machine learning assets we had produced to CleanBay for the pharma services.
Yeah, and it's quite an achievement to establish a company and then run it for 17 years. Well, most companies, you know, don't survive the first year, let alone more than 10 years, let alone more than 17 years.
Yeah. So when you know that these kind of companies, they usually either get bought by bigger ones.
Yeah.
This is not what I want. I don't want to kind of get an acquisition by anyone else. And to survive in such a company, you need to have a good team of people.
Yeah.
And so I spent the early days in my career as the CEO of that startup company, trying to sell the company, to sell myself, and to set up a group of people around. It took me a while. And one of the customers I had, which was basically one of the founder of Sitel, Nitin Patel, told me once, you're going to have a business once the business is going to be able to work with, and it's really what I try to do for some time. It took me about maybe 10 years to achieve a level in the company where the company is kind of self-sufficient. And I'm not the CEO of the company anymore. I quit in 2019, and there is a leadership team in that company. It's running all the operations. We do have meetings every quarter when I basically review things, but I do not really put my hands anymore into the day-to-day activities. And the people over there, they really feel empowered into their job. And they like having a perspective of having a long-term relationship with their clients, with me, within the company. And I think this is one of the achievements that I'm probably the most proud of, is to be able to have a team like that that can really run the things without me too much involved.
That is leadership. You help others to become leaders themselves so that they don't need you anymore so much.
Okay, maybe, I don't know. But that's, yeah. So that was one of the things that I received from that person, which is try to have your company work on its own without you being too much involved, and then it's going to be a success. Well, I don't pretend it's a success, but at least it has been running like that for a couple of years. So far, so good.
I would definitely think that's a success. Okay. If you just think about Simon Sinek and the Infinite Game, yeah, mm-hmm. There is no judgment about who wins this game. Who wins this game is who stays in the game. And that's what your company is doing. So that's
awesome.
Yeah. So, but we want to talk also about your AI involvement. And in this episode, we want to talk specifically about all the things happening in clinical research. So if you look at the current landscape of AI in clinical research, what do you see?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who are looking into that right now. Okay. And since the GPT thing came live beginning of 2023, so more than a year and a half now, has been a lot of research and activity and investment into the field. I haven't really seen anything being completed yet. I think we are still in the learning curve and the development curve. But there are a lot of activities going on. There is a lot of investment. There are a lot of interesting features that are being brought up. And yeah, it's a very nice time just to get involved, especially as a statistician, because it's a modeling activity. Basically you make a prediction. The GPT is a kind of an auto-regressive model. You want to predict the next word in a sentence, but the data is different. You know, you are not playing with the structured data that we used to. We are playing with, anything can be called data, really.
Provided
it's processed by a computer. And that's really the interesting part. And just to go to your question, which is about the application of this technology within the clinical research area, I basically see two trends. As far as I'm involved, the first is related to this digital twin initiatives, which is basically using machine learning methods in order to predict what is going to be the response of a given patient given this baseline profile and the treatment and the intervention being. So there has been a lot of modeling and simulation efforts that were conducted beforehand, but it was models that were trying to understand the things in order to make predictions. And you know, the better you understand, the less predictive it is, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And with the machine learning models, we are not really so much into the understanding about things. It's more about the prediction of things. But the predictions are relatively good. And there are ways to monitor the accuracy, whether your model is overfitting or not, and this kind of thing. So overall, that gives you the possibility to basically simulate patient without having the patient responses during a trial, without having the patient to come physically, and then to basically do better designs on your study and to optimize the development of your clinical research. And in that front, we have been very, very active at ClinBay and ProDis. We have basically developed some automated machine learning techniques. So some techniques where you basically don't have to do all of these checks and processing of the data, testing multiple models, optimizing your models, etc. It's done automatically in a pipeline manner. So you basically have your input data, you define what is your response, what type of response, what are the covariates, what type of covariates, and then it does everything for you up to the end, and it's finding the best model according to some performance criteria. And it's really helping us to streamline this kind of analysis and its application in clinical research. And what we are promoting a lot in this field, that all of the efficacy studies, I think, should go through a machine learning pipeline now. Basically, when people are running efficacy trials, they want to make comparisons of treatments. So they want to compare groups. They don't use cross-sectional type of approaches. Whereas the machine learning thing has the ability to look longitudinally in a patient and make predictions for the future. And I think we should basically take advantage of the data that has been collected in a clinical research, run these machine learning methodologies, and use this in order to help us design the next phase in the development. And the companies who are able to do these kind of things are going really to get a competitive advantage when it's going to come to design the next phase and then to improve the success rate of there. So that's probably a long long answer.
Yeah, I think this is a super exciting area to work on. And yes, currently there's a lot of hype about generative AI, and then people completely forget about there's also other things within machine learning that are not generative AI.
So, with respect to that, it's really the first one is really recycling the existing clinical data that we have in order to look at the data in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be helpful for you to design your next phase. This is the goal. Now, with respect to generative AI, initiatives and there is also a lot of things that can be done. And there are a lot of people who are doing a lot of things using that. But I think with respect to that, the biggest challenge is going to be through the processing of the data in a study.
Mm-hmm.
So we use to basically manipulate the patient experience in a study to basically do it into a community bar type of thing. We basically got the patient going to the doctor's appointment. The patient is reporting his symptoms, whether he feels better or not, etc. The doctor puts that in a case report form, and then it's encoded into a database. You make the mapping for the adverse events into a dictionary. And at the end of the day, you analyze data that basically you claim are really mapping exactly what the patient meant to do, but which are very structured. And there has been a lot of information lost and a lot of activities happening from the time that the patient met the doctor to the time you do the analysis of the data. And I think the big challenge that we are going to see is that we are going to be able to analyze directly the recording between the patient and the doctor.
Okay, so do you think we could so let's say the patient and the doctor, they have a discussion.
Okay. Yeah?
And say, like, typically what happens every day in the clinic. Yeah.
Yeah.
You come to your physician, you get asked lots of different questions, you explain about your background, all kind of different things. And what's currently happening is the physician or the site nurse or whoever takes that information and captures everything that is in the case report form accordingly. And so you get structured data.
Yeah.
You think that in the future we could use all this unstructured discussions here? So the interviews, all the documentation, all these kind of different things, and use that as a baseline for these generating these digital twins?
Well, we could use that to analyze the study.
Yeah.
So not necessarily do the digital twin things directly, but instead of going through all of the data management steps that we are currently seeing, in the future, I'm relatively convinced that we are going basically to look at the source data, which is basically the recording of what is happening in the doctor's.
Yeah.
Okay. And the way by which it's going to be done is using these large language models, the GPT type models. And we're also going to use a similar technology called the embeddings. So an embedding is basically used by these machine learning models in order to convert unstructured text, images, sounds, etc., into some vectors of numbers. So for just take an example of an adverse event. So a patient reports an adverse event like a migraine. With the embedding, you can convert migraine into a vector of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's like a coordinate in a multidimensional vector space. And then this migraine adverse event has a coordinate that is going to be relatively close to the coordinate of headache.
Yeah.
Because the two terms are relatively similar.
Mm-hmm.
But another term like, I don't know, a fracture is going to have a coordinate that is going to be much different.
Mm-hmm.
And using this embedding space, you can analyze your data. So you can use these GPT models in order to query and extract the information from the recordings that you want. And then you convert that into this embedding space. And then from there, you have numerical data. And numerical data can be analyzed using multivariate statistical methods, whatever. So you don't need to go through all of these steps, which have been manually done in the past, in order to analyze a study. That's going to happen for sure.
I think this kind of bridge between structured and unstructured data would be amazing. Because throughout my life as a statistician, I was always kind of puzzled that, you know, everything we do is based just on the structured data.
And okay.
We always need to kind of, you know, do a lot of effort in terms of coding and all kind of different things. You know, lots of people in clinical research do nothing else than checking data, coding it, structuring it, so that in the end we can apply our techniques that absolutely rely on structured data. Yeah. And very often data set is either continuous, or categorical. That is unfortunately still the vast amount of how we look into data. Yeah. Binary data, continuous data, categorized data, and that's more or less it. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have all these kind of problems around missing data or kind of, you know, making sense of, for example, as you said, safety data, where there's, of course, a lot of relationships within it that we more or less completely ignore. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Maybe we have created some categories of categories, like SOCs, or we create new kind of categories by lumping AEs together or things like that. Yeah. But this is a pretty crude approach to summarizing and then structuring all the data, just because we don't have any tools to do it in an effective way.
Okay. So
I completely agree with you. Bridging the gap between structured and unstructured data will have huge changes on how we work.
What is going to happen is that this AI technology is going to help you to create structured data from the unstructured data. But then the analysis, the statistic analysis, which is the summaries across things, the comparison of things, is still going to be the same as before. You know, you are still, you're going to have still to work on ITT populations, making some computation, promising data, doing some statistical inference, etc. But it is just the step from recording the data structure to getting some structured data that is going to change, and the type of data that is going to change. Instead of analyzing categories, you are going to analyze vectors of numbers, which are related to some degree. So, I think we basically need to combine the two work together.
This is outstanding. And is that your mission, to work with CleanBay on that?
Well, I mean, CleanBay is obviously getting involved into doing statistical consulting as well as doing the analysis reporting. We also spend a lot of time on doing infographics in order to communicate to the patients the results in a layman way. But yes, we are, in addition to that, now we have basically two areas of focus. The first one is this digital twins. So we consistently reanalyze clinical studies using machine learning methods in order to make predictions and to help companies design their next phase of development. And the second thing is related to, we did not look at the whole database. It's, you know, we are not a data management company, by the way. We are only a statistical company. I didn't really want to go into the data management field because it's too difficult. I mean, it's very complex. It's a computer business. And I also got an advice from another person who is running such a business, told me, if you can really do your stat and not go into the data management, it will basically be easier for you.
Yeah.
But with the advancement of machine learning and AI, now we have the possibility to really get into the data management thing, because you don't need any humans to be involved. You can do it with a computer. And data management becomes a statistical analysis somehow. Okay. And so what we are doing right now is to focus on the adverse event. So we are looking into the Mendrell dictionary, and we have developed some technology in order to make coding into this dictionary, for instance. And so we are able to code verbatim into the dictionary using AI with some relatively good accuracy. I think we are about 85% accuracy level. So this was step number one. Now, step number two was to try to get to extract the terms from long sentences, like a dialogue with the patient, or we have also looked at social media posts. So if a person is basically going to TikTok, putting a comment on a video saying, I also have this condition and I took this drug, it helped me to do this and that, we can extract the information and code everything into Mendrell, and then have the data be ready for analysis. That was step number two. And this also can be applied in pharmacovigilance area. Now, step number three is to study the relationship between terms. So, for instance, in pharmacovigilance and in signal detection, Mendrell has defined what they call this SMQ, so the standard Mendrell queries. The FDA has a similar list of things, which are the SMQ, they call it like that, which is basically a group of terms which are related to a medical concept. But these terms may come from the Midgard hierarchy below the concept, but it also may come from other sources. For instance, the concept cancer is including more than 1,000 terms in Midgard.
Wow.
And what people have done in the past was to basically go individually into all of these 26,000 terms in Midgard and try to relate which terms related to what concept. They have done that for about a percentage right now. What we are doing is to try to automate that as much as we can. So you basically type in your keyword for the SNQ, like, I don't know, migraine, and then it's providing a list of proposed PTs which are related to. It's working relatively fine. We have an accuracy of about 40%, so we are still missing a lot of things compared to what we have done at Metra. But with time, we expect to improve things, and that should enable people basically to look at adverse events coming from clinical databases in a different way. And to basically be able to regroup things, to identify trends, and to ease their analysis of the signal, to try to understand what are the other indications of a drug and things like that.
Also, this will be pretty amazing if we are able to do all these things, and you described a couple of steps, kind of initial steps. I think if we extrapolate into the future from there, and we work closely together with our friends on the data science side, I think we can do quite a lot for the future. Awesome. Thanks so much, Francois, for this great discussion about AI. And thanks for sharing your insights into starting ClinBay, as well as also speaking about how sometimes things don't work out with Prodis. And I wouldn't call it a failure. I would call it a learning. And of course, you transitioned lots of things that you have developed at Prodis into ClinBay, so they are not lost. And I love that you kind of describe how structured and unstructured data and analysis can converge together in the future. That's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as a statistician, to me, we really have the opportunity to influence the future for healthcare in general.
Yeah.
And we have to realize that these AI models, they are statistical models. Yeah. And so we are very well prepared to handle these models and to make them adapt into the work area where we have been working in, and the key, the important goals and objectives that we are pursuing in our industry. And so I really think it's a very fascinating time for being a statistician, really, because you can really influence a lot. And I do encourage your colleagues or my colleagues as statisticians to really look into that in a positive way. You're going to see a lot of interest, and I'm sure it's going to be a bright time in the future for statisticians.
Awesome. Thanks so much. That was a great sentence and the end.
Okay. Thank you. Talk to you. Bye.
Don't forget to submit your abstract to the fall conference of the Effective Statistician happening in November. Deadline is 15th of September 2024. And if you listen to this afterwards, well, at least register for the conference now, because you can get lots of great workshops, awesome keynotes, and hopefully lots of contributed presentations, because as this episode goes live, I don't know how many we will get, but we are already getting some. So stay tuned and see you there. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS, who put the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.